Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're broadcasting this week from the Dart Replacement Division here at Car Talk Plaza.
Oh,
Tommy has a new jalopy.
Well, I would like to officially introduce to the world my red 1952, it's almost as old as I am, MG TD.
This is like H.G. Wells' time machine,
isn't it?
I mean, you're going back. What's wrong with you?
Well, I've had, let's see, the newest car I've ever had is a 74 Chevy.
Right.
Right? Which I owned in the 80s.
That's true.
And I've had 60s cars in the 70s.
Yeah. And in the 90s. Yeah.
And I was working my way back, and then I had the 63 Dodge Dart, which was my dear friend for many years. And now, a 52 MG TD, and it is fulfilling every MG TD or MG or just English.
What is a TD?
Stereotype.
Total disappointment.
Total disaster. it is fulfilling every stereotype of British cars. So far, I have spent just about every weekend fixing something.
Well, I'm happy to point out that, like most of your cars, this one leaks gasoline. And you already had to push it into your driveway.
I had to push it into my driveway because it wouldn't start. It has no windows, as many people will know. And it doesn't get any better than this.
And it has no heat. And
not that the heater doesn't work. It doesn't have a heater.
Right.
It doesn't have a gas gauge. Not having a heater, it doesn't have a defroster.
Well, if you'd like to see what this little beauty looks like, we have pictures. We have pictures on our website, cartalk.com, so you can see Tommy in his sleek little red beauty.
Yes.
Before he turns it into garbage.
Which I'm doing.
I would suggest you go look at these photos
right away. And I have to say that as deep as my grief was for the Dart, the little MG has done a miraculous job of pulling me out of the depths of depression that I've been in.
Yes, renewed your spirits, so to
renewed
speak.
Renewed my spirits. I am thrilled and happy, and I am back once again. One of the great things about the Dart was its reliability, but with that reliability came the fact that you didn't have the excitement that you have with the MG of, will I make it home?
Mm.
And every night now I barge into the house, into the kitchen. There's my little family sitting there waiting for Daddy to come home. The dog wagging their tail, and I say, "I made it!" And they go, "Hey, Daddy!" So, despite the fact that the Dart is gone, I am happy again. That's it.
And
that's all.
And if that's all it takes, we'll buy you a car a month.
That's all it takes, man.
If you'd like to talk to us about your car, the number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. This is David in Honolulu.
David. Oh, my.
Boy, what could be better, Tommy, than having your MG in Honolulu?
Oh, that would be too much for me.
It would be too much.
I wouldn't be able to take it.
I had one years ago. It was great. You would have loved it.
You had a TD? No.
No, it was an MGB.
A B. Yeah, well, the B was okay.
Yeah, but if you're in Honolulu, everything's okay.
Everything.
That's right.
So what's up, David?
I have an 87 Toyota MR2, and lately, I don't know what it is. It doesn't do it all the time. Just once in a while, shortly after I started up, while it was still cool, when I'm sitting at a stop sign or a stoplight, it's in neutral. All by itself, the engine will decide to go zoom, 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 zoom.
And when you say zoom, 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 that means it's surging? The RPMs are going up and down, up and down?
Yeah, it'll go up maybe 300 revs and then drop back.
Well, I spent part of the weekend trying to prevent the MG from doing that. Because it was doing exactly the same thing.
I get to his house last Saturday and he says, "I've got this thing running like a dream."
Oh, man.
So we start it up, and it says it does the following.
Oh, yeah.
That's a dream, huh?
Well, that was the warm-up period.
That's the warm-up period. So does this go away, David, after like a minute or two?
Yeah.
And does it do it whether the car is cold or warm?
No, only when it's cold, shortly.
Only
after
when it's cold.
Yeah, just right after it's been started up.
And this is the biggest problem you have?
Well,
isn't that nice? Isn't that great?
He's almost giddy.
It's such a weird thing, and I'm going, what is this car doing?
Yeah, but see, that's because you live in paradise, David. And in paradise, you expect everything to be absolutely perfect. And I don't, it's okay.
Yeah, if I want to get perfection, I've got to get this straightened out.
Well, it sounds like you have a vacuum leak.
Hmm.
And the thing that's most suspect is the bellows that connects the air mass meter to the throttle body.
Ooh.
You could be lucky, and I'm sure you will be lucky enough to have.
You will be, of course. He's
a
in paradise.
Loose clamp. There are two clamps that hold the ends of this onto their respective
ends.
Ends. There you go. And it's possible that one of the clamps is loose, and then once the thing heats up, it solves the vacuum leak goes away.
Hmm. Okay.
Because things
or you could have a vacuum operated switch that's supposed to be running, for example, your canister purge solenoid. And there's a vacuum leak there, and when the thing is cold, it makes it surge because there's a vacuum leak in evidence. Then it warms up, the switch shuts it off. You're going to have to find somebody who's willing to pinch off vacuum hoses when the engine is cold and find out which one is causing this thing to happen. And as soon as you pinch it off with like a needle-nose pliers, the surging will go away, and then you've got to trace it back and find out what the source of the
What's
vacuum is.
What's that connected to?
Uh-huh.
But I would first check those two clamps on the air mass meter.
Okay.
But I'm more inclined to believe that it is a vacuum, thermally operated vacuum switch.
Okay.
That's at fault. Not that I have any idea where it is.
Well, there's a philosophical issue here of whether David should even bother to find out what's wrong.
Because then he'll have to go looking for another problem to solve.
Well, I mean, maybe he should be getting prepared for something less than perfection. I mean, perfection is good, but I mean, come on. If you don't have a little bit of adversity in your life, and if this is it,
right? You'll never develop any character.
You won't develop any character. I would say try to live with it and see if you can do it without having sleepless nights and stuff like that.
Well, this is just exactly the right amount of adversity that I need.
Well, that's right. That's why I'm saying
you might want to leave it alone.
I would leave it alone. Just let it do what it does, and then when it solves itself every day, you can just say, thank God, it's okay.
Boy, am I glad I got the two best philosophers as well as the two best
Great. David, I wish you the very best.
Okay, guys, come on out and visit us sometime.
We will. See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK, that's 888.
I mean, is it true that if you have no problems, then you'll go looking for them?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this guy has no idea how lucky he is.
Yeah,
he's never driven a 63 Dodge Dart or a 52 MG or a 74 Chevy, where if you turn the key and it starts, you say, how the heck did that happen? He's wearing a little 300.
Well, like you say, when you live in paradise, you've got to go looking for the nitpicky stuff.
Jeez.
He doesn't know how lucky he is. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Faith from Kenmore, Washington.
Faith.
Hi, Faith.
Hi.
That's a nice name, isn't
it? Kenmore, is that where they make the washing machines and the dishwashers and all that?
No, I don't think so.
So what's up, Faith? What brings you here? Just blind faith or what?
actually, I have a very frustrating car problem and also an interesting personal tidbit for you. So you tell me what you want first.
Everything. Just go. Just spill your guts.
You do whatever you want.
Tell us
the
car problem first.
Okay, I'll tell you the car problem first. I drive a 92 Camry wagon. I have a problem with the automatic door locks.
Yeah.
The way I usually lock the car is that I open the door and I have the kids open their doors, and then I push this door lock button, and the car locks, and we close the doors, and that's that.
Uh-huh.
But in the last few months, several times, I've had this problem where, for some reason, after I open the door and push the door lock button, I have to get back in the car to get something or separate fighting kids or something. And
oh, you've locked them in the car? Yeah,
well,
okay.
Well, no, I lock me in the car. Yeah. If the door closes behind me while I'm still in the car, I then can't open it.
Oh, how nice.
And in order to get out, I have to climb over the shift in the middle and get out the passenger side, which is very clumsy and unladylike. So I don't know what to do. And I had it at the dealer recently, and, of course, I couldn't reproduce the problem for them, so they don't believe me.
I recall
you had this problem.
That there was a recall. In fact, at the very beginning of it, before they knew how to fix it or before they had enough.
They were giving out hammers to people.
They were telling people to go to their local home center and buy an S-wing hammer. It was, because you'd have to break the glass to get out.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was dangerous. People were getting locked in their cars.
You
can
get out
like
the passenger door, but before long, you may not be able to get out of any door.
Well, actually, one time it did happen on the passenger side.
The problem that they had with these is that neither the door locks nor the power windows would work. So you couldn't even climb out a window. If you think climbing over the shifter is undignified, think about climbing out the window. So you need to go to them and remind them that there's probably a technical service bulletin on this car, and you'd like them to do a little research and find out. There must be some relays that have to be replaced. I don't know what the final result was.
All right.
All right, now give us the dirty personal tidbit.
Yeah. Well, it just so happens that I grew up across the street from your esteemed senior producer, Doug Berman.
No.
And I used to babysit for him and his sisters when they were kids.
He's saying, oh, it's Faith. The light bulb just went on.
He got it.
How old was he when you babysat?
Oh, 9, 10.
Oh, he must have been a hellion.
He was a mischief maker, but he was a good kid.
You have any real dirt on him that we can use?
Yeah. Like, did he wet the bed when he was 9?
Yeah. Or when did he stop wetting the bed?
No, I will tell you what he did to get me in trouble once, though.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead. Yeah, I love it.
Well, one night.
Just between you and us, of course.
Yeah, just between you and us. One night, he and his sister decided that it was torture the babysitter night.
Yeah.
So the two of them just decided they were going to break every rule and give me every kind of trouble they could, raise all sorts of hell. And the final straw was when I was trying to get them into bed, and they decided to run out of the house half naked and scream all around the neighborhood.
He still does that!
His wife keeps telling him.
Yeah, give us some real dirt, Faith. I mean, he's still doing that.
Oh, God.
All right, Faith, we may have to get back to you somehow and discuss this at greater length.
But make sure you leave Catherine your phone number so we can call you, because I'm sure we'll need to talk to you off the air.
All right. Well, make sure Doug is still talking to me first.
I don't think he is. See you, Faith.
Take care.
Get your door locks fixed. Bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Corey from Pittsburgh.
Corey with a C?
Corey with a C.
From Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh, PA.
Are you on a speakerphone?
No, I'm in my office, which is a cement block. Is it echoing?
Yeah.
No, not bad.
It sounds like you're in the men's room. I didn't want to say that.
I was waiting to hear a flush.
Well, so, we'll do our best. What's up, Corey?
Well, I have a problem with my 86 Volkswagen Golf.
Yeah.
That when I get it up to about, over 25 miles an hour, it makes a sound on the front passenger wheel, makes funny noises.
Yeah, you have a bad wheel bearing.
Bad wheel bearing.
It's a growling noise, right?
Yeah, kind of a growling noise.
Like a cement mixer. You know, is it like a cement mixer? Like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Maybe. It sounds more like a bear. It's kind of got a nice, vibrant hum. There you go.
Yeah, you have a bad front.
That's a wheel bearing.
You have a bad front wheel bearing.
I was afraid. I wasn't sure if it was that or maybe a bad CV joint.
And no, it's a bearing.
It's a bearing. Is that something that I can fix myself?
No.
No.
Well, maybe.
Well, that no. First he thought no. And then he said, well, gee, Corey might have a brain. He might. No, he doesn't.
Well, I mean, it is something you can fix yourself, except that you don't have the
tools.
You probably don't have the tools because you're going to need a press to get the hub off the bearing, to separate the bearing and the hub, and then to get the bearing out of the steering knuckle.
I see.
And I think you'd be well advised to, if you wanted to do part of it yourself, you could.
Okay.
You could buy the bearing.
Right.
Okay.
That would be the part you'd be doing.
You could take it down to the local machine shop.
With the steering knuckle in your hand, you'd remove the steering knuckle. That involves unbolting the ball joint, separating the steering knuckle from the tie rod end and from the strut.
Okay.
And then taking the big nut off where the axle goes through the bearing.
Okay.
And, you take,
and then that whole business will come off right in your hand.
Yeah, it's 1, 2, 3, it's 6 bolts.
Okay.
Six bolts are nuts.
And it'll be obvious when you take off the tire which ones you have to take off.
Okay.
Yeah, take off everything until the piece that's making the noise falls on the street. And then you'll have your car up on a cement block, and you go to the machine shop and you say, and they'll install the bearing.
Okay.
You don't have to use words.
No.
Their teachers never told them, use your words. They grunt. They'll figure it out. They will press out the bearing and put the new one in.
I mean, is money that big an issue, or you just want to learn how to do it?
Well, I have two problems. For, I don't know whether to curse or bless my grandfather for instilling this in me, but if you have something in our family, you take good care of it.
Yes, good for him.
And the other problem is I'm a grad student, and I have no money. So if I could do it cheaply and do it myself, that would be great.
Well, you'll probably save, I would guess, $50 doing this.
Yeah, $50 to $100.
Okay.
By doing it yourself.
Well, that's a couple weeks of groceries.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. You'll be without the car for maybe a day or two, but you have plenty of time because you're what, a grad student.
Right.
Right. Okay.
And by the way, you should do it as soon as you can because this could be dangerous.
Okay.
See you, Corey.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Bye bye.
Hey, by any remote chance, do you remember last week's puzzler?
Well, I had a lot of things in my mind this week, I'll have you know.
So I'm guessing last week's puzzler wasn't one of them, huh?
No, it wasn't.
All right, well, I'll remind you, last week's puzzler was about a record-setting but non-medal-winning Olympic performance. And I'll have the details along with more of your calls in just a minute.
So please stay tuned.
Oh, the truck I bought from Mo, I know it doesn't go, but I'm going to fix it up this summer. And I'll head out on the road, carrying a great big load. I'm gonna say goodbye to my mother. Well, there's lots of room inside to take people for a ride. And maybe on the side I'll paint my name. I'll travel all around, I'll roam from town to town. To do just what I want is what I aim. And I'm gonna see this country, yes, I'm gonna see it good. I'll stand in lines where no one's ever stood. I'm gonna hit that highway and everywhere I go, I'll be traveling in style in the trunk I bought from Mo.
And even though our children petition the courts to change their last names to Pajoli whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR. Hey, if you'd like to hear more Car Talk.
Yeah, like if you're a teacher with a class of really rotten students you want to punish.
You can download hundreds of classic Car Talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and, of course, the answer to last week's challenging little puzzler.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned...
A new series, as I recall.
Yes, this was from my track and field series, and it was sent in by a fellow named David Johnson, and here it is. An athlete competing in the Olympic Games puts forth a record-setting performance in the finals of this event, and I think I told you the event was the long jump. Not only does he record the longest jump in that day's competition, he sets, you ready for this, a world record. His jump, in fact, is accepted into the record books. No one has jumped farther than this fellow, ever. But he does not win a gold medal. In fact, he does not win a silver medal or even a bronze medal. He wins what?
Squat.
So the question
is... How about a pepperoni medal?
So the question is, how could he not win a gold, silver, or bronze, or any kind of stinking medal after performing a record-setting jump?
Yeah.
Well, he did, in fact, he did exactly as I suggested, or as David Johnson suggested.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But he did it in an event like the decathlon. And even though his record went into the record books, indeed, mm-hmm. he did so poorly in the other events. And the long jump was a hint because that's one of the events in the decathlon. If it had been chess, for example, I don't think it would have qualified. But
right. But
he did so poorly in the other events that he did not qualify for any medal.
What's decathlon mean?
Ten. Deca.
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 So you go through 10 different things?
Yeah, I mean, there's the long jump, there's
the short jump, the high jump.
Well, there's hurdles, there's the pole vault.
Oh, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then they tally up your entire score, and
the riding mower competition. Yeah, and the person who's got the most, they have some system of awarding points. You get so many points for a first place, so many points. And he got the most points for that long jump thing.
But not good enough.
But he stunk in everything else.
Yeah.
Do we have a winner?
Yeah, we do.
At least eight. I want to say, I'm thrilled that I did not get, at least from you, ball.
No, I love it. I thought it was a magnificent.
Well, we'll see what our listeners have to say. Who's our winner?
The winner is Jill Sanford from Fort Collins, Colorado. And for having her answer selected at random from all the other correct answers that we got this week.
She winning a hot point range? What?
Jill's going to get a a Kenmore washer dryer.
Stackable?
A stackable washer dryer. And a $25 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at cartalk.com. And with that $25, she can get a washer dryer from Sears.
Well, Jill, if you're not home when they deliver the washer dryer, back they go.
Or she can get a copy of our CD, Why You Should Never Listen to Your Father When It Comes to Cars, and she can unload that as a Father's Day gift. See, we even provide disposal advice. You buy the stuff, it's junk, and you give it away.
Cool. Anyway, we'll have a new puzzler from the Coinage series.
Coinage!
Coming up in the third half of the show. So don't give up on us yet. It might get better. In the meantime, if you have a question about your car or anything else, please give us a call at 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Jason from Oakdale. I got a 76 Dodge pickup with a 318 in it.
Hold on. Jason from where?
Oakdale, Minnesota.
Oakdale, Minnesota, and you have a Dodge?
Pickup truck.
A Dodge pickup.
It's 25 years old. It's antique.
With a three.
318 V8 in there, two-barrel carburetor.
Where are you, in a wind tunnel someplace?
I'm on my cell phone here. Let me hop in the truck. I was looking under the hood.
Oh.
I'm out here in my driveway.
Oh.
Okay, so go ahead, man.
All right, and the problem I'm having is getting my truck started. I've had it now for a year and a half, and I'll crank it over here. I'm pumping the gas. And I got nothing. Won't start.
It won't start.
Nope. But then I'll get out and I'll dump a little gas in the carburetor. And sometimes the motor will run backwards, like it's pre-ignition.
Do huge fireballs ever come out of the carburetor when you do this?
Occasionally it does, but when the motor runs backwards, mostly a plume of blue smoke comes out the carburetor.
When did you do the tune-up?
Tune-up? What tune-up? I never did a tune-up.
You never did a tune-up?
Never did a tune-up.
You haven't done anything to it lately?
Only thing, I put new plugs in it. But I didn't, I think it might help to put a new cap and rotor and wires on there. Now I just poured a little gas in the carburetor, trying to start it, and nothing.
But does it occasionally, when you do this thing with the gas, does it occasionally start up and run in the right direction?
Yeah, it'll run in the right direction, and then once it warms up enough to hold an idle, it'll run just fine. And then I could run it all around town, come home, turn it off, and go to start it back up again, and it won't start.
Does it always not...
What was that? Did you hear that?
What?
It just ran backwards and shot a big old plume of smoke out the carburetor. No.
Great. We need some information here.
All right.
Yeah, close the door. Get it back inside the truck.
All right, I'm in the truck.
All right.
Do you know that the choke works? You know what the choke is?
Yeah, I got the choke on there. It's kind of...
Take off the air cleaner.
I already got it off.
You already did.
Is the flap closed? Is the choke flap closed?
It is closed.
So when you poured the gasoline in there, you had to push down on the flap with your finger to get the gas to go in?
No, actually, I'd take a piece of paper... And I wad it in the side of the choke so it stays open.
Oh, so it is closed.
Yeah, the choke is closed right now, but it seems like it'll start up when I wad it, when I wedge the choke wide open and pour gas in it, then it'll start up.
And have you ever looked there when, after you've started it and driven it for half an hour and it's running like a dream, is the choke then open?
The choke, I believe it opens up, yeah.
Good.
That is good.
So we've determined that your choke is okay.
Okay, here's what you're going to do now. Do you know how to pump the pedal from under the hood?
Yeah.
Okay, hold the choke open with one finger.
All right.
And squirt gas into it with the...
Operate the throttle and see if gas is squirting in down the throat of the carburetor.
Look straight down and you should see gas come out like it's coming out of a water pistol.
If you can't see, don't light a match.
All right. All right, I'm up over the carburetor now, looking down in.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, gas is squirted in there. Good.
That's good. So that's the accelerator pump. Okay, don't do that. How many times did you do that?
Three times.
You flooded it. It'll never start again. Well, that in order to start the thing when the engine's cold, you should, in fact, get in, pump the gas two or three times. That will allow the choke to close, and then it should fire right up. If it doesn't start right up, it means that either you have weak spark, because we've already ascertained you're getting plenty of gas, yeah. I think.
Your problem is electrical.
Yeah, well, I'm a little bit bothered by the fact that you say you have to put gas in it. But when you're putting the gas in, you know what you're doing? You're also opening the choke.
Yeah.
So I think putting the gas in is an unnecessary step. If you were to just hold the choke open, it would probably start. And the reason it won't start when you let everything work the way it's supposed to work is that you're getting a very weak spark, and that's not enough to ignite that enriched mixture.
Yeah.
Why do I feel I have to talk louder? He's the one making all the noise.
Maybe he doesn't speak English.
I'm getting a headache.
Yeah, here's what I would do.
So you already changed the plugs, you said, right?
Yeah, I put new plugs in it.
You did.
But I didn't. I think it might help to put a new cap and rotor and wires on there.
That's what you need.
But something else comes to mind, and it could be that the ignition timing is so far off that it won't run well when it's cold, or run at all when it's cold.
I'm going to go ahead and try to start it one more time. I got the carburetor.
But you haven't checked the timing for a long time, have you?
Ever.
No, I've been meaning to stop and get the timing checked. I just haven't had the time.
Yeah.
So you go ahead, try to start it.
All right.
Wait, before you do.
Yep.
Put your foot on the gas pedal and hold it down for a half a minute.
All right, it's to the floor.
Leave it to the floor while we talk.
All right, here.
Don't do anything. Are you willing to invest 30, 40 bucks?
Oh, yeah, I'm willing to invest $300-$400 in it.
Well, I mean, if it were mine, I would go out and buy a new set of wires, a rotor and a cap, and just for the heck of it, a coil.
Yeah.
And I'll bet you if you just put all that stuff in, that my brother is correct, that the spark is just weak. And that would explain, and it would be nice to check the timing.
Well, try to start it. Go ahead.
Okay, leave your foot on the gas pedal. Don't touch it.
All right.
That's it. Stop.
No, okay. Here's what you want me to do now.
Yeah.
Pump the gas a couple of times.
Pumped it three times? That's
good. Take your foot off completely.
All right.
Turn the key.
No, huh?
All right. He's got one hell of a battery, doesn't he?
Actually, since I've been diagnosing this problem, I've went through three batteries. I'm just going to put a little more gas in the carburetor.
Sure. In fact, while you're at it, pour some on the seats. Pour some on the seats, too.
Well, the pouring the gas can't possibly work.
No, I think what's
working... It'll start right up now.
Nothing.
Yeah,
nothing. No, I think you're flooded
I think you're hopelessly flooded. Here's what you're going to do. Take the spark plugs out.
Yeah.
Dry them off.
All right.
Put them back in and change the cap and the rotor and the wires and call us in the morning.
All right.
Good luck, Jason.
Well, thanks a lot for you guys' expertise and advice. It's been a nice chat.
Hey.
All right, brother.
Good luck.
All right. Yeah, I'm going to give it one more turnover for you.
Go ahead. Let's see what happens. Maybe it'll blow up.
Come on, old blue. You got it in you. Start. Come on.
See you, Jason.
Oh, it's fired. It fired. It made one kapoom.
One kapoom.
See you later, man.
You guys have been a big help.
Yeah, sure.
I'm sure.
Bye-bye. 1-888. We got them all, don't we? 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Sandy calling from Orlando, Florida.
Sandy.
Yeah.
Orlandy. Do you know it takes 26 hours by Amtrak to get from Boston, Massachusetts to Orlando, Florida? And
yeah.
It is the pleasantest 26 hours you'll ever spend.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned that because the return trip took 41 hours. Go figure.
Go figure.
That's just with those minor stopovers.
Well, Tommy
to
took the train a few years ago and did make it indeed in 26 hours, but I had taken the train in the opposite direction some years before, And I recall that it took me the better part of two whole days.
Headwinds, two man. Headwinds. You ever hear of headwinds?
I guess so.
Of course.
So what's going on, Sandy?
Well, has nothing to do with headwinds. I have an 88 Honda Accord.
Mm-hmm.
And I've recently, well, within the past couple of years, I've gone back to school full-time, and I work full-time plus a part-time job.
Oh, so you have a full-time job, a part-time job, and you're a full-time student.
Right. I have no social life.
That's two and a half lives rolled into one.
Exactly.
It's pretty cool.
Wow.
Two and a half lives rolled into
one. I have to do a little math here because two and a half, it looks like you have time to sleep about 18 minutes a night.
I get 5 hours.
5 hours.
Five, that's plenty.
Mostly in class, right?
That's all in class. Yeah.
Well, here's the problem.
Here's the problem.
Because of my schedule, I haven't been able to get the car into the shop.
I knew that.
Yeah. And it has decided that it wants to wake up the neighborhood at about, 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, with the horn?
No, the horrible screeching sound.
Screeching like there's no tomorrow. And I'm pretty sure it's the belts.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, how would I go about, like, deciphering which one it was? And is there any way that I could possibly figure out how to take care of that myself?
Oh, what do you mean? You got two and a half jobs here. Why can't you just pay someone to do it?
Because I don't have the time to get it into the shop. Nobody's there at 5 a.m.
But you're going to have to make the time to figure it out. Go buy the belts. Go buy the tools to take the belts off. Put the belt on, by which time, I mean, it could be done while you're napping in class.
do you have any experience working on this car?
I've done some stuff, actually, working on it myself. But I mean, not a whole lot. You know, oil changes, brakes, and things like that.
Uh-huh. Well, you do have experience, and you obviously have the tools.
Well, I have access to them.
Okay.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay, and she's got a lot of spare time. I mean, she's frittering away 5 hours a night sleeping.
To say nothing of 3.5 or 4 minutes talking to us.
Sure, so she's got plenty of time to do this.
Well, it's very likely that the belt that's making the noise is the alternator belt.
Okay, now that would, because it happens when I start it up first thing in the morning.
That's right.
If it sits for more than, like 2 or 3 hours, it'll do it again.
Yeah, good. Because rubber actually expands when it gets cold.
Right.
So the belt gets looser.
Okay.
So if you're lucky, if you look at the belt, 88 Accord, I believe, has a grooved belt.
Yeah, I think it does.
And if you look at
the
business side of the belt, that is the part that rides against the pulley.
Okay.
If it looks all cracked and disintegrated, then you need to replace the belt.
Okay.
If it doesn't, you might try just tightening it up.
Okay. And does that take a special tool, or is that
it takes real skinny arms.
I have that.
I was hoping so. Because you have to get down there and loosen. There's a 12-millimeter bolt on the front of the alternator, and then you have to tighten up the adjusting bolt, which actually pulls the alternator away from the engine and tightens the belt. Then you go back and you tighten up this other 12-millimeter lock bolt.
Okay.
So they're actually just two bolts to turn. Getting at them is a little difficult, and the belt should deflect no more than half an inch when you push on it.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, you can test it first to see, is the belt loose? If you push down on the belt and it goes down much more than half an inch, that would be the cause of screeching. You just tighten it up.
Okay, and if it doesn't do that, then...
Well, then you've got to replace it.
Then you may need a new belt, or in some cases, we've seen on other Hondas that...
You may need an alternator.
Well, No, I don't want to mention this because I think it will depress you.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, forget about it. I can't tell you what it is.
I
shouldn't. Our purpose here is not to...
It's not to make people nervous and anxious.
Exactly.
Quit the real world for school, you guys, please.
Exactly. So you just go... And you can go to any parts store and buy the belt.
Okay.
And it would be a wonderful Saturday morning when you have all that spare time.
Sunday morning
when you have all that spare time project.
And then if the noise doesn't go away, call us back because it's real serious. See you, Sandy.
I can put my car on the auto train, send it up to you guys.
Okay.
It'll be there in 41 hours.
Maybe.
Thanks a lot, Sandy. Good luck.
Thank you so much.
Bye. Hey, look, before we get to the new puzzler, and I know you can't wait, we have to take a short break.
It's about time. I mean, I need a break from the continual onslaught of strange and hard-to-interpret noises, you know?
Hey, that's just what our listeners say.
And we'll be back with a brand new puzzler in a minute.
Radio plays, the lighter works, but if the window sticks, give the handle a jerk. I got new tires, stop bombs.
friend. I will get you through. Pick off in.
And even though the IRS gives extra scrutiny to people who give lousy car advice whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR. We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and, of course, the new Puzzler. And as I mentioned earlier, this is from the Coinage series, and here it is. You're sitting at a table with a bunch of pennies on it, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, and, of course, some are facing heads up and some are facing tails up. You with me so far?
Yeah.
You're wearing a blindfold.
Ah.
And you're wearing mittens or gloves. So that you can't actually feel the coins and tell which side is facing up. That's the reason for the gloves.
Yeah.
If we could trust you, if you weren't so dishonest, we'd let you do it without gloves.
Well, I always sit around with mittens and a mask on anyway.
On the table is a bunch of pennies. You don't know how many pennies. It's unimportant. But I will tell you a certain number of them is facing heads up.
Okay? Yeah.
Let's say it's 10.
Okay. So you tell me there's a bunch of pennies in front of you and 10 of them are heads up.
Now, with your mittens on, you can move the pennies around. You can pick them up. You can put them down again. You can listen to them. You can shake them. You can do whatever you want. See if Abe Lincoln talks to you.
Yeah.
So here's the question. Is it possible to separate those pennies into two groups so that each group has the same number of pennies facing heads up?
The answer is yes. I got the puzzle right. Give me the money. Give me the $25.
And part two, what is that way?
What do I want to do now? I want to separate all the pennies into two groups so that there's an equal number of heads in both groups?
Yeah. And remember, you're blind.
I'm blindfolded.
If you think you know the answer, write it on a postcard or on the plexiglass covering of an authentic Tom Seaver autographed baseball from the 1969 World Series and send it to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238. Or you can email your answer from cartalk.com. If you'd like to call us, our number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is John. I'm a gainfully employed art history major.
Come on! Where are you from?
Lower Long Swamp, Pennsylvania.
Lower Long Swamp, I love it.
There's a place in Ohio called Dismal Seepage. I think they have a
Dismal Seepage.
Dismal Seepage, Ohio.
Jeez. So what do you do as a successful art history major?
I'm a technical writer, and I do accident reconstruction work.
How is that a gainfully employed art history major?
Well, he has a degree in art history, but he's gainfully employed nonetheless.
Oh.
In spite of it. Is what he's trying to say.
That's right.
Oh, all right. Not because of, but in spite of. And you were an art history major, but that in no way helped you to be gainfully employed, so it was a little bit misleading to say, don't you think?
But that's okay.
But we like you anyway. As long as we caught you at it, then we don't have any grudge. We don't hold a grudge.
Okay, cool.
Cool. So what's up, John?
I have a 1992 Ford Taurus SHO. With a little boy's big engine,
yeah,
and a five-speed transmission, and I have a question about the clutch.
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago, I took the car to the dealer to have him check something in the transmission. Head mechanic got into the car, pushed the clutch pedal down, and said,
"You need a clutch.
I can tell you right away, you need a new clutch." He hadn't even driven the car yet.
Uh-huh.
I asked why. He said, "Because you shouldn't have to push this hard. SHO clutches shouldn't be this hard to push."
Pay no attention to this guy.
Well, no, he may be right. The style of clutch that you have is called a Bellevue clutch. It's the kind of clutch that has a diaphragm and a bunch of fingers that the release bearing presses on.
Right.
And as the clutch gets worn out, as the disc gets worn out, the fingers of the clutch, of the pressure plate, get further and further from the flywheel. And they get closer and closer to the release bearing.
Right, right.
And that makes the clutch very hard to depress because you now be entering into a situation where you're losing your mechanical advantage.
All right.
And it makes so when you get into a car and the pedal is extraordinarily hard to push, it means one of several things. Either the clutch cable is bound up, you could just need a new cable, or the clutch is in fact worn out, or he has a boat payment due. Does the clutch slip?
No. I measured the effort level with an art history major's force gauge.
Excellent.
Yeah.
A spring scale on the end of a wooden stick.
Excellent.
Yeah, good.
It takes about 30 pounds of force to push the clutch to the floor.
Yeah. And the question is, what's it supposed to be? And the answer
You're
is...
You're supposed to know that.
How would we know? I know that's the question. I'm telling you. How would we know?
30 pounds is an awful lot.
Okay.
You're going to get one monstrous left leg.
Okay.
Yeah. Put a clutch cable in it.
Put a cable in it. Okay.
Yeah, it's all a new cable. And hope that that makes it a lot easier. If it doesn't, then you need a clutch. But you can wait until it starts to slip.
Cool.
And you won't be doing any damage to anything. So don't worry
about it. Well, bless your heart.
See you, John.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, do you know what it's time for?
Time to switch to our summer white coveralls?
No. It's time to play Stump the Chumps! This is a stupid part of the show where we voluntarily bring a caller back onto the show to find out if we were right or wrong in the advice that we gave.
Or the caller's lawyer has insisted on this as part of the settlement agreement.
Right. So who's our chump stumper this week?
It's Paula from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Don't remember.
Paula called with a Ford Bronco that she said was whistling from the dashboard.
Oh,
remember?
It was in perfect thirds. Is she the one?
There you go.
For every 500 RPM increase in engine speed, the pitch of the noise went up by a perfect third.
All right. Stop singing, will you? I'm trying to enjoy the Zomfia dream sequence here. As the vacuum goes down, the way you're going to isolate it is you're going to find that hose that comes through the firewall.
Yeah.
And you can plug that thing with a little rubber cap. And then drive the vehicle, and the noise will be gone.
Okay.
I don't want to ask any embarrassing questions at this late hour.
Never stopped you before.
But how does this explain
every day is the answer.
The incremental thirds every 500 RPM?
I don't. I mean,
sure, anything you can say, anything makes a sound. She gave us some very precise specifications.
I do not know what peculiar dynamics are at work here. I missed this course.
Then don't waste our time with the rest of your theories because they don't matter. You can take your vacuum hose and stop it.
What do you think?
Now, I'm not sure, but I think I detected a very slight lack of confidence in my diagnostic prowess.
No, it's just that I thought you were completely full.
So we admitted that we had no idea how to explain the precise rise in pitch of her noise, and we thought the noise was related to a vacuum, or I thought the noise was related to a vacuum leak at the heater control unit. Did we have a backup answer?
Yeah, we did. It was the fuel pump pressure regulator.
I don't like the odds here. Come on, let's get it over with. Paula, are you there?
Yeah,
Paula, wait a minute. Before you leave my brother holding this vacuum hose, we have to ask you the following legal questions.
Is it true, Paula, that you have not been offered any cash or prizes by members of our staff or any Preakness jockeys in exchange for a favorable answer here today on Stump the Chumps?
That's correct, yeah.
All right, okay. So what happened when you found that vacuum hose and disconnected it?
Well, actually, I didn't get to finding the vacuum hose.
See,
you also had a third answer.
We did.
That you glossed over really quickly.
It was probably mine.
Yeah, it was.
Oh!
and it was low coolant.
I said that?
Yeah, real quickly. It's like, yeah, my brothers think it's low coolant, but forget that.
See, my brother's always casting aspersions on my ideas.
That's right. And so I went home and I said, well, here's what they said to do, but here were the other two little suggestions. So we back flushed the radiator system.
And the sound went away.
Yes, until Sunday. And then we added water, and by adding water, the noise came back.
Okay, well, it's nice to talk to you. See you later, Paula. Bye.
Well, I have to say that, A, I have no recollection of having talked about coolant level, and, B, even after you say that I did say it, I have no idea why, because I don't understand. I still don't understand.
It was a comment you made in passing about the coolant level.
Yeah, but he does that all the time. He just spews out like a volcano. There's all kinds of stuff flowing out. I mean, it all lands on the ground.
And it's like, well, we got to find the hose and block off the hose, but we got to do this first anyhow, so might as well just do this.
Yeah.
And And but now the noise is back, and I know the coolant has something to do with pressurization and vacuum, so maybe abstractly you are right about vacuum.
Yeah, see, I rely completely on my guts for these things, and that's why I don't have it. I don't know what the reason.
Because the brain left them long ago.
I mean, when these guys do the healing with the laying on of hands, they don't know how it works. It just works, and you don't question stuff like that.
Of course not, especially if they're paying you the big bucks.
Well, thanks for playing Stump the Chumps, Paula. You've managed to lower our batting average even lower.
Right, so but we don't know if you do not count in the statistics because you're either a yay or a nay here.
Well, I mean, she does, at least she knows that the noise is related to coolant level, although even with that, we are unable to help her.
Well, I was partially right because I said vacuum leak, but it's a coolant leak, so I had the leak part right.
Right, right. And it's all connected.
There we go.
And it's all part of one big system, you know, the vacuum.
Yeah,
coolant.
all the various leaks.
The leak system. Well, Paula, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, well, thanks a million.
It's been great talking to you.
And we'll send you a washer dryer for your trouble. See you later.
And if you find out anything that could help us to understand the inner workings of vehicles, please let us know.
Well, you did help a lot.
Okay. That's what we're here for.
Okay.
Another success. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is John from Saxon River, Vermont.
John, what's happening?
I have an 86 Toyota Tercel wagon, two-wheel drive, but that's not going to affect this problem any.
No, okay. Huh?
Right. So, anyway, it's March a few weeks ago, and we're sugaring like we do up here in Vermont.
Sure.
And I'm driving down from the sugar house to my house with a big milk can full of maple syrup in the back to finish off on my stovetop at home.
And I
hit the brakes.
See it
and
coming.
This milk can empties out all this maple syrup all over the car. So it's a real sweet-smelling vehicle. But anyway.
No kidding.
The syrup gets all over the back. I had the seats folded down for the station wagon part, and I immediately got out the towels and hot water and wiped up as much of the syrup as I could. It smelled for a while, but I thought everything was okay. A few days later, I'm driving my kids around I got some teenagers, and I'm driving them around. They pull out the seat belts, and they're covered with maple syrup.
Of course.
In the back. So.
Yeah.
I'm stuck. I don't know how to get rid of the maple syrup.
Literally stuck.
So I don't know what to do here. I've tried pouring boiling water down the little slats where the seat belts come out. And
you need to take out an ad in OCM magazine.
OCM.
Organized Crime Monthly. And frequently, underworld figures have hits where they put people in cars and then they put the car and the dead body right in the Atlantic Ocean. You need to offer your car.
Oh, do a submerge.
A submerge, and then you can go and pull it back out a week or two later.
And it'll be perfect.
And it'll be
gone,
all cleaned up. Yeah.
Well,
I think
aren't
so.
You glad you called, John?
I think, I mean, there obviously must be some solvents you can use, and I'm sure somebody more intelligent than we will call and tell us what you should be using.
Which narrows it down to about 248,999,000 people in this country.
I was wondering if there's any possibility of, like, drilling a hole in the bottom of the container so that it could leak out.
Oh, drilling a hole in the floor, that is?
No, because the little box in which the seat belts are
sitting.
Where they retract.
The casing or whatever, the housing.
Yeah, I mean, if you pull it all the way out, you'll be able to get to all of the belt.
Yeah.
Except for what's back inside. You're right.
Well,
and it wouldn't hurt to drill a little hole. I don't think that bothers it.
It's pretty obvious to me that you're not averse to having liquids in your car.
Right.
So if how many gallons of this stuff did you spill? 10 gallons?
Probably 4 or 5.
4 or 5 gallons.
God.
I think you need to get a garden hose with one of those adapters you can put on to mix soap in.
Oh, yeah.
And you want to use hot water.
Okay.
And I think you want to just spray everything.
Okay.
And then tip the car upside down if you can, let it drain out. But I think if you sprayed right in there with the garden hose with a soapy solution.
Okay.
You know, you want to. You know the thing I'm talking about? You can buy it at the hardware store.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, you put it on the end of the hose and hot water. Hook it right up to your water heater. You have hot water up there?
We do have hot water.
Well, I wasn't sure. When I lived in Vermont, we didn't have hot water.
That's right.
But I think if you blast it out with hot, soapy water, you will dissolve it, and it'll dissolve readily.
Okay.
And everything will work.
But will it leak out of that housing?
Yes. Oh, yes. It is not airtight.
Okay.
It'll absolutely leak out.
Okay.
And if it doesn't, you'll just push it out with the water that you're putting in. But the water will eventually leak out or evaporate. I wouldn't worry about that.
Okay.
And punch some holes in the floor. Like I said, tip the car over and most of the water will come out.
Next time,
put a cover on the thing, will you, you knucklehead?
Okay.
See you,
John. Hey, John, that was a pleasure talking to you.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, it's happened again. You've blown off another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green and Catherine Frau Blooper Fenelosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare, assisted by Connie Britchard. Our engineer is John Carton-Parati. And our theme music is by David Dog Grisman. Our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Fort Dix Peppermint Sticks, Marshmallow Chicks, and Brownie Mix Quick Fix before dinner at 6, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our tolerance quality control guy is Nat Sass. Our ornithologist in training is Luke A. Boyd. Luke, a boy.
Luke, a boy.
Our ornithologist in training is Luke A. Boyd. Our official spokesperson is Howie Vasive. Our big band leader is One and a Two. Clothing is provided by U-Jazz Jeans. Our Russian chauffeur is Peekoff and Dropoff. And our seat cushion tester, of course, is Mike Easter. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is U. Lewis Dewey, known to the ascot-wearing alums in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And remember, above all, and don't forget, don't drive like my brother.
You got it.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1320, download classic Car Talk episodes, or check out our 25th anniversary swag all over at cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, a great alternative to the trade-in.
Yeah, instead of trading in your old car and getting $14 for it, think about donating it to benefit your public radio station.
Whoa, did you say you know where I can get $14 for a trade-in?
Well, not for your heap, bud.
All right, check out the Car Talk vehicle donation program all week at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though the NPR elocution coach sobs into her chamomile tea whenever she hears us say it, this is NPR.